Welcome to Mean Age Daydream with me, Brian McWilliams, where we're going to be making some jokes, laughing out at broken world, but also laying out some philosophy for the future, how we can fix this mess we're in and have a great time doing it all with a Mean Age Daydream. All right. Welcome, guys, to Mid-Age Daydream. I am your beautiful host, Brian McWilliams, and I am joined today by a man who I won't bore you guys with all the details, but we've rescheduled the show 18 to 25 times, but it's finally come together. And that is Brandon Joe Williams. Welcome to Mid-Age Daydream, Brandon.
Thank you very much. It's funny, when the intro was running, I just realized when I was growing up, my nickname was B-Will. And you could be B Mick Will. I just realized that. So,
let me tell the audience about you, because this is I'm looking forward to a pretty fascinating conversation. Brandon Joe Williams is an author. He is a common law lawyer, and you are a state national of California, which we're going to get into. You are the founder of the Amnesty Coalition, which aims to address the Stave Slate framework that's created by webs of legal contracts and documents like birth certificates, social security cards, and the U.S. citizen fraud system. Love that phrasing. And you were in sales and marketing, which I love because that means you actually can sell your ideas effectively, as I do. And of course, you're also the author of Don't Be a Slave to Your Clients and Love is a Battery. So having laid that out, I only have one more thing to add, and that's that I love your website. OneStupidFuck.com. And
I
recommend going to that. I'll link to that in the show notes, of course. So yeah, welcome, man.
Thank you.
I mean, where to begin? You know, we were talking about your state, your state national status. I mean, it's probably the best place to start, if you agree, is probably just the difference between citizenry and kind of how we get looped into the system to begin with, right?
Well, yeah. What is your I try to do a little bit of research before each show, but there's been so many shows in the past 6 months that I kind of lost that aspect of my platform, which is horrible. Have you guys ever covered this, or have you ever had anyone on here? Have you ever talked about any of this stuff involving like the legalities of like location and how all this works with like law or anything on that?
I know I have not. Now, I'm not sure. Okay. Like our show has been around forever. I mean, we go back like, 8 years, 10 years. So
that's fantastic.
In the distant past. Yeah, we were one of the first podcasts in the space. But in the distant past, we may have. Right now, I can't think of a time we've talked about it. So that's why I'm really interested to hear your take on this and where it's going, because I personally don't know a lot about it.
Well, in that case, I have a little presentation that I normally do on these shows, and we are a bit tight for time. If you want me to, I can just jump straight into a screen share if you'd like.
Well, do it, man. Yeah, for sure.
Cool. But all your peeps, you guys talk about, what do you guys normally talk about, and what's your kind of background demographic, so I can just get a little bit idea of?
So, I mean, our demographic is primarily, it's libertarians. We have a pretty broad range of ages in there, but, it's a lot of them US-based libertarians. We do have some people from Australia, from the UK that listen fairly regularly, Argentina, we get some from there, but it's primarily US-based libertarians or conservatives.
Okay. So most people who fit those categories have probably heard about, sovereign citizens. They've probably heard about state nationals. They've probably heard a lot about this stuff. When I first started looking at all this stuff, I was, just to close this for 1 minute, I was basically like, there's so much information. It's so convoluted. And the people who are producing this information are much, much older. They do care. A lot of them were very angry and upset over what was going on in America, and that would shine through their writing. I found it difficult to really learn all this information, so I ended up buying a bunch of books and reading those and then diluting those down, and then I wanted to have a resource, and basically my whole platform is very silly and crazy. It's a Beavis and Butthead show, right? And the reason why is because I wanted to make this information available for much lower demographics. I was like, the average person that I'm meeting that's interested in this information is probably 75 years old. What do I have to do to get it down to, let's say, 30 years old? Okay. Because 20, that's stretching it a bit. But I was thinking in my head, like 30, 35 would be like a massive, massive change for this whole thing, right? So I developed this entire totally insane, totally crazy thing called One Stupid Fuck and all this craziness. And it's all on self-deprecating humor. It's supposed to bring levity into the information. People are so angry as it is. And as you learn more, you're going to get angrier and angrier. So I was trying to figure out how do I balance that out and not create a situation where people are emotionally overwhelmed within 8 seconds, which is pretty much what happens, right? So it may seem childish, it may seem insane, but there is a method to my madness. And basically the whole idea of it is to the more you learn, the more pissed off you're going to be. And people just peak out so fast that it's an attempt to try to prevent that from occurring so that a person can continue their self-research without exploding emotionally, okay?
I like it.
Yeah. So the way this works is people have heard this term probably in the things you're talking about, in the term status correction. You ever heard that term before?
No, actually I haven't.
Okay. So there's this term status correction in my arena, right? No one can really define it very well. So I'm going to explain to you what status correction is. Status correction is basically there's two aspects to it. There's identity and there's location, right? So people are going around in life and they get all these letters from the IRS and they get all these letters and they think that that the name that's on these letters and these things is them, right? But if you look at the word person, the definition of the word person is really where a lot of this whole thing, this whole storyline starts, right? The term person shall be construed to mean and include an individual, a trust, estate, partnership, association, company, or corporation. So every document you sign, whether it's a passport, driver's license, banking information, loans, government forms, unemployment, welfare, the list goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. What happens is that when you're born, when your certificate of live birth is processed, right? You'll see on the certificate of live birth, which you have to order. Some states you can't get it. I have so many people that email me, oh, this and that and the other thing. Some states you just can't get it, okay? And I don't know, you know, but I'm from Indiana. It's pretty easy to get mine. You'll see here, I think it's this one here. I can barely read it, but it one of these lines says date received by local health officer, okay? Or something of that sort, right? So what happens is on that date, the government opens up a corporation of your name in all capital letters. Now, a lot of times you'll see this term all over the internet called straw man, right? Mm-hmm. You've heard that term before, right?
Oh, of course, naturally.
So the word straw man is incorrectly used in all of these things that you'll see, okay? So the definition of the word straw man, let's not talk about it. Let's just look it up, right? Cornell Law. Straw man is a third party that holds property in intermission for the sole purpose of transferring it to another. Now, this corporation that the government opens of your name in all capital letters, this definition of straw man doesn't necessarily fully encompass what that corporation is. I have found some other definitions that I like much more. This definition here comes straight out of Black's Law Dictionary. If you look up in Black's Law Dictionary under the term corporation, you will see a section called public corporation. A public corporation is one created by the state for political purposes and to act as an agency in the administration of civil government. So if you read in the Constitution, what jurisdictional elements does the federal government have? Commercial flow in between the several states. So what they do is they create a public corporation that acts as an interface between you as what's called the natural person and the government, okay? So
it's like being born with natural sin or original sin, except the original sin's the government in this case.
So every single person in this country that has ever had a birth certificate and a social security number, you are actually two different persons, right? Mm-hmm. One is a natural person, which we're going to go to another term here. So another term that I really like besides public corporation is the term ens legis. Ens legis is a creature of the law, an artificial being as contrasted with a natural person. Now, the term natural person in law generally means man or woman, but there are a few definitions you can find that include possible artificial persons, which would include trusts, estates, partnerships, corporations, companies. So you have to be a little bit careful with the word natural person. Whenever I use the term natural person, I always add in a definition to make sure that it does not include any artificial persons, just to kind of close and weld that possible back door. You don't want any confusion with that, right? Now, you can use the term man and woman as well. That's the most clear you can possibly get. But the term that you're going to see the most if you actually get involved in litigation, which is a lot of what I do, I do a lot of mainline litigation, then you're going to be using the term natural person. And I like to just weld that back door shut. That way there isn't any confusion as to the fact that there could be artificial persons involved in when I'm referring to a natural person. So let me read this again. A creature of the law, an artificial being as contrasted with a natural person, applied to corporations, considered as deriving their existence entirely from the law. So you can think of it literally in the law, when you open up a corporation, you are literally having a child. You can think of it the same way, right? Mm-hmm. And if you have a child, you actually have two persons. One person is the natural person. One person is the ens legis. Now, if you've never filled out a birth certificate and you've never gotten a social security number, they wouldn't have an ens legis. So there would be only one person, which would be the natural person. Okay. Now the way I look at this is like a monopoly board. Okay. So you have monopoly pieces, right? You have these tokens, right? Let me just pull this up, right? And then you have the monopoly board, right? So the way that this works is the first of the two sections of status correction is identity, like I said, right? So let's say it's you. You have an ens legis, and you have a trust, and you have two corporations. So we take these pieces here. We have all the pieces on the board. We have this one could be you as the natural person, man or woman. This one would be the ens legis. This one would be your trust, and this one would be your corporation. And let's say you have one association and one partnership. This would be a person. This would be your association, and this would be your partnership. Okay, so each one is an individual person in the law. And that's why it's so confusing when it comes to CPS cases and children, because children are literally persons. They're property in the law. They don't have rights. They're it's no different than a car. You can actually draw up a manufacturer certificate of origin for a child and you can file it just like you would a car, literally. Okay.
That's good to know.
So it's kind of wild, right? You can trademark your children's names. You can do all the same thing you would do if you were building a car and you wanted to produce the information that's needed for that car. It's the same thing. In the law, they look at the making a child as the exact same thing, which is insane.
I tried to trademark my daughter Fiesta, but Ford came after me.
There you go. So the way this works is... people think they are that person that's listed on these bills that they're getting. They think that they are that person that the IRS is writing to. So this first, the thimble is you. The shoe is the ens legis. No one is writing to the thimble. Mm-hmm. You've never, ever, ever gotten a letter directed towards you as the natural person. Every single letter is directed towards the ens legis, and you are the representative or authorized representative or agent of the ens legis. And the reason why is because the ens legis cannot speak or write. And that is how everything works in terms of identity. Now, the second part of status correction and how all this works is location, okay? And in my opinion, location is entirely based off of the definition of naturalization. Okay, so if we go to Title 8, now the way this works is it's very easy. The U.S. Code is divided up into different titles, which all have different names, right? And I'm sure it's the same for other countries. You guys, I mean, I don't know a lot about a lot of other countries, but there's probably some kind of code or something that has a bunch of different sections or whatever, right? And if you go to Title 8, which is, if we scroll down, Title 8 is Aliens and Nationality. So this first one is the title name. This one is the body of law. And then this is a section symbol. And this is the section 1101. Mm-hmm. And then we scroll down to subsection A23. This is where things get really crazy and exciting. Okay. Now, when I first saw this, for months and months and months, I thought there must be some darker aspect to this. There isn't. This is actually exactly what it means, which is not common in law. A lot of times, there's a lot of hidden meanings and things. Shockingly, this actually is this simple. And I know for most people, they're not going to believe that. And I know for most people, it might take a while to process this, and that's okay. Okay. The term naturalization means the conferring of nationality of a state upon a person. Definition of person means an individual or an organization. We've already covered that. After birth, by any means whatsoever. So what that means is when you fill out voter registration or when you get a driver's license and you state under penalty of perjury that you are a resident of state of California, you did not live legally in state of California until you conferred the nationality of the state called state of California upon a person. Now, that's an interesting point. Did you confer the nationality of state of California upon yourself as the natural person? Or did you, or did they construe the idea that you are conferring nationality of state called state of California upon the ens legis? Now, what you don't realize is that they always assume whenever you're filling out documentation of your own name that you are doing these things on behalf of the ens legis, not as a natural person. So so when you fill out for a driver's license or voter registration, you are moving your piece, which is actually the shoe. You are moving the shoe into the spot on the Monopoly board called State of California. And you can move that piece as many times as you want, whenever you want, by simply conferring nationality of a state upon a person after birth by any means whatsoever. Okay.
So where is the where's the resting state of the ens legis if you don't confer upon it any nationality?
It's born in the District of Columbia, which we are going to cover in just a moment.
Okay.
So the way that United States works, now that we've gone over naturalization, we will come back to that because there's more to talk about that, right? So 28 USC 3002. So the number one rule in all of this is that you never, ever assume the definition of anything. And the number one thing that you never assume the definition of is things like the word person or things like the term United States. So what is United States or U.S.? So 28 USC 3002 subsection 15 definition A, United States means a federal corporation. So it's a person. United States is a person. Now, where is that person located? We're going to go to a different body of law called the Uniform Commercial Code. Uniform Commercial Code is a little bit different. This first number is the article, which is the same as the title from USC, Article 9, and then this is the section number, Section 307. We're going to go down to subsection H, and we're going to find out where is that person called United States located. Location of United States. The United States is located in the District of Columbia. Now we're going to find out in 42 USC 9102, we're going to find out how does that work in terms of how does one of your persons, one of your playing pieces, wind up living there? The definition of the term United States citizen. Now, a lot of people ask me, well, wait a second, Brandon, if a corporation is a person, then technically a corporation could be a United States citizen. That is correct. Subsection C says any corporation, partnership, association, or any entity organized or existing under the laws of the United States is legally considered a U.S. citizen. But we're not going to cover that right now. We're just going to cover Section A. United States citizen means any individual who is a citizen of the United States by law, birth, or, there's that big word, naturalization. So law means basically by contract. Okay. So if you open up a corporation under the laws of the United States, that would be by law. If you have something that was born in the United States, which is actually very complicated because we know that the United States is located in the District of Columbia, but I've never seen any additional information because the District of Columbia is 10 square miles. So how large and what sector of the District of Columbia is United States located in? There is no information on that anywhere. So you could live in Washington, D.C., and someone could say, oh, you live in the United States. And you're like, I actually don't know. I actually don't have enough information to answer the question, because if you were in a court of law and someone said, well, you live in the United States and you're in Washington, D.C., you can challenge that. Because the thing is you'd say, well, I know that the United States is located in Washington, D.C., but I don't know where. And the thing is that if you're the burden of proof falls on the prosecution. So if you're prosecuting me of the fact that I live in United States, I will say I do live in Washington, D.C., but the thing is that you're going to have to prove to me where the actual location within Washington, D.C. is United States, and they won't be able to do it, okay? So the thing is that naturalization is really where everything happens, right? So you become a U.S. citizen by stating that you are a U.S. citizen. Your companies, your trusts, your associations, your partnerships, your playing pieces move into the spot on the monopoly board called United States by simply you saying the fact that you're a U.S. citizen or U.S. resident or in the U.S. or something with the United States, right? That's exactly how it works. So the thing is that you don't live in United States unless you say that you live in United States. Now, United States is not located in one of the original several states. It's not located in the United States of America. It's not located anywhere that would have anything to do with the Constitution, the Second Amendment, etc. It's located in an entirely foreign corporate nation or country called United States or Washington, D.C. So if you confer the nationality of United States upon yourself or your ens legis after birth by any means whatsoever, you just stripped yourself of all of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
Jesus. That's good to know.
So everyone in the country, 99.8% of the entire population of North America on paper lives in the District of Columbia. And we don't even know where in the District of Columbia.
Okay, interesting. So I mean, I know you're going to get into this. So that's as you're talking, I'm like, okay, I think I see where the tactic would be here. Is that if you're identifying outside of the District of Columbia as your state, then how can they prove that you are beholden to the law of that state, aka the United States, residing in the District of Columbia? Right?
Is that well? It gets a lot crazier than that, but yeah. That's
the oh God. Going, okay, right? I lay the crazy on me. I need all the crazy. Give me a quick shot of the pickle to calm me down.
Here, I'll give
I'm
you.
Already getting mad.
I'll give you a picture of me in a mankini.
Woo! Oh, even better. Oh, there we go. Yeah. Oh, and a Jessica Rabbit too. All
right. Okay.
Great. I'm back in. It calmed me down. My heartbeat's lower.
So check this out. So if you if I don't have anything to show necessarily, I think I will dig something up at some point. But if they are tricky enough to call United States a corporation that's located in the District of Columbia, if you go on to Dun & Bradstreet, which is a business directory, by the way, you will find business directory listings for things like State of Texas, State of California, State of Utah. It's always the same wording. It's state with a capital S, of, and then whatever the state name is, right? So the thing is that those are actually just corporations that are located in the District of Columbia, okay? So I will show you how that works. If we go to Dun & Bradstreet, they always use the same terminology, which is nice. It's not too confusing. So State of California is a business. That business is located in the District of Columbia. County of Los Angeles is a business. It's located in the District of Columbia. City of Los Angeles is a business that is located in the District of Columbia. Gavin Newsom is the CEO of a business called State of California that is located in the District of Columbia. Okay. So when you confer nationality of State of California upon yourself or your ens legis after birth by any means whatsoever, you are also naturalizing into the District of Columbia. So there's two major traps here. The first one is United States. The second one is the State of California, the County of Los Angeles, or the City of Los Angeles. I am not inside of or a resident of or have any contractual agreement with any of those corporations, all of which are located in the District of Columbia. Now, If you go onto Wikipedia, you can find all of the original non-incorporated names for all of the various states of the Union. So, for example, California, which is one of the later ones. The actual legal, the lawful non-incorporated name of California is the California Republic. So if, when you say that you are at, now the word domicile is where you actually live. The word resident is when you live somewhere kind of temporarily and you intend to return to your domicile. And a lot of times it has something to do with some kind of business or commercial means. That's why they never use the word domicile. They always use the word resident, right? So the thing is that you are not a resident of state of California. You have a domicile in California Republic. And you can take something like voter registration. You can cross out where it says state of California. You can write in the unincorporated California Republic. They will accept it. And when they accept it, you are not actually naturalizing into a corporation found in Washington, D.C., and you can still vote. It's basically a loophole, right? So the thing is that you have to be careful and make sure that you are not naturalizing into Washington, D.C. They basically have traps everywhere, and they're constantly getting you to say the incantation. When you say the incantation, you disappear from California and you reappear in Washington, D.C. Now, once you reappear in Washington, D.C., you are now taxed, you are now under the United States Code, and they now have full jurisdiction over you in every single respect. And they don't even really have jurisdiction over you. They have jurisdiction over the ens legis, and you believe you and the ens legis are the same person.
That's okay. So I want to know, so where should I interject? Because I obviously, like I said, have questions. You know, my next question is going to be then, how do you separate yourself from the ens legis? How do you separate yourself if you're already in the matrix, right? We're already born into the corporation. We've already incanted the phraseology that has made us into citizens residing within the District of Columbia. So then how do we go about separating that? Or should we do more education on these topics and save a return trip, a teaser to have you back on to explain how to break free after educating us in the next time you come on, which I'll obviously schedule as soon as possible.
we'll just go a little farther. I know you got to run off of here. We'll go a little farther, and
I could go another 30 minutes, but I know
obviously that's fine. 30 minutes is plenty.
You did warn me that this was going to be long, so
We're not going to get through the whole how to on that, but this is going to be great. That the how to is you have to understand all the underlying information in order to how to anyways. So let's just keep going here. So we have this other. So if you look at an I-9 form, I-9, everyone fills these out when they get a job, right? I-9 employment eligibility verification form, right? You look at box one, it says a citizen of the United States. We've already covered what that is, how that works. The word citizen, by the way, means employee or officer, municipal employee or officer. So if I were to reword this in common phraseology and remove all of the traps from it, this actually states a municipal officer or employee of the federal corporation located in the District of Columbia. So when you look at it that way, you're like, oh, well, I would never check that ever again. Exactly. And just in case you're wondering, you have 18 U.S.C. 911, which states whoever falsely and willfully, so up until this point, you have not willfully, whoever falsely and willfully represents himself to be a citizen of the United States shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 3 years or both. So anyone that ever calls me a citizen or a U.S. citizen, I jump on them with all my force. And I say, if you think you're going to entice me into committing a felony, you are sadly, sadly mistaken. And I rip them apart, right? I'm not going to prison. So you better not call me a citizen of the United States or a citizen or anything like that, because I am definitely not, right? Now, what's the second choice we have here? We have a non-citizen national of the United States, right? We have all these terms that you'll hear floating around, such as state national. I use that term, American national, all these different things, right? Now, in all honesty, I try to keep everything as pure as possible, as much as I can, right? The actual term comes from 8 U.S.C. 1101 subsection A21, and it's just the word national, and it's not even capitalized. Lowercase N-A-T-I-O-N-A-L. A national means a person. Now, don't forget, that means an individual or an organization. The term national means a person owing permanent allegiance to a state. Now, we have to break this down a lot. There's a lot to break down here. First and foremost, permanent really trips a lot of people up. Now, they're using a special definition. This is also a trap. The term permanent means a relationship of continuing or lasting nature, as distinguished from temporary, but a relationship may be permanent even though it is one that may be dissolved eventually at the instance either of the United States or of the individual in accordance with law. Permanent means nothing. It is circular. You can remove it entirely. So let's reread this. I'm going to reread this. I'm going to remove the word permanent, and I'm going to replace the word person, okay? The term national means a individual or organization owing allegiance to a state. Getting much more simple now. Now, the word state, what does that mean? People think it means one of the 50 states. Well, there's actually 56 or 57 because you have Washington, D.C., you have Puerto Rico, you have all the U.S. territories, you have American Samoa, you have Virgin Islands. Now, the way it works is, in the corporate world, there's 56 or 57 states because they're all just corporations that are located in the District of Columbia. In the non-incorporated original United States of America, you have the independent 50 nation states that are all unincorporated. So they're all actually independent countries. America, in its original form, which is still alive today, actually, underneath the incorporated veil, is like Europe. It's a whole bunch of little countries. It's 50 independent little countries. And each country, you know, that's why the sheriffs have all the power they have. And that's why you've heard these things over the years, right? So what happened was is they created these fake companies, and they superimposed these fake companies over top of every single thing. And then they said that, oh, naturalization is just by conferring the nationality of the state. And then they trick you into conferring the nationality of this fake state. And then poof, now you're in Washington, D.C. Okay. That's how it works, right? So what is a state in its most basic sense? It's actually very simple. So the word state and the word nation actually mean the same thing, right? And the word and the definition of the term nation is going to blow your mind. It does not mean anything even close to what you think it means. The definition of nation or state is an independent body politic, a society of men united together for the purpose of promoting their mutual safety and advantage by the joint efforts of their combined strength. But every combination of men who govern themselves independently of all others will not be considered a nation. A body of pirates, for example, who govern themselves are not a nation. To constitute a nation, another ingredient is required. The body thus formed must respect other nations in general and each of their members in particular. Such a society has her affairs and her interests. She deliberates and takes resolutions in common, thus becoming a moral person who possesses an understanding and will peculiar to herself and is susceptible of obligations and rights. A nation is not a location. A nation is not a country. A nation is not anything more than a group of individuals. Could be over the internet, could be over mail, it could be over phone lines, it could be anywhere, doesn't matter. It's a group of individual minds coming together, operating as a unified body, the same way that cells unify to create a human body. That body operates with good internal tranquility and then excellent external diplomatic relations. And it has a certain morality to it, and it takes resolutions in common, and it operates as a helpful, benevolent body, essentially.
This is really interesting definition. I was talking to Max Borders. I don't know if you've spoken to him before, and he was incarnating his new visual, envisioning a digital nation, essentially, which would be, you're operating under contracts in the cloud. And this definition makes a lot more sense because you said the nation is not something that is based upon a physical location and can be disparate in its location, but the beliefs, the allocated resources, the moral values, et cetera. So that's really interesting.
Exactly, right? So your podcast and your family and your job and any little groups that you have, They're all technically nations, and those nations can be foreign governments from United States by simply following 18 U.S.C. 11. The term foreign government includes any government, faction, or body of insurgents within a country with which the United States is at peace, irrespective of recognition by the United States. You do not need any recognition at all whatsoever to completely open and operate your own entirely independent nation. You do not need land. You do not need anything. More proof on that is the sovereign military order of Malta. This organization has been around for over 900 years. It does not have any land at all whatsoever. They issue passports that are diplomatic passports. They have full diplomatic immunity. They issue license plates that are accepted in almost every country in the world. They operate as a completely sovereign nation. They do not have any official land.
Wow.
I'm sure there are other examples of this. The United Nations, everybody knows they have all that too. They have their own license plates. They have diplomatic immunity. The United Nations is not a country. The United Nations is a nation in itself. And another place I can show you that is in the Foreign Affairs Manual, which is the law book associated with the Department of State and International Law and Diplomatic Relations, we have 8 FAM 505.2 talking about passport endorsements. If you go down to passport endorsement number 11, which is a diplomatic endorsement for the bearer being an ambassador at large, they give an example here. For example, ambassador at large for global women's issues. Global women's issues is a nation. That nation qualifies for diplomatic immunity as an ambassador at large. It has nothing to do with a country or South Korea or a location. That has nothing to do with how all this works. Nothing. You do not need land. Even micronations believe you need land. You do not need any land to start a nation or have a nation or to operate a nation. It's absolutely, totally not required at all whatsoever. Okay? So going back to another thing here. The term foreign government includes any government, faction, or body of insurgents within a country with which the United States is at peace. Now, what does that mean? What does peace mean? So everything hinges on this one word at this point. We've got this one hinge point, peace. Okay, so what does that mean? Well, amazingly, the definition of the word peace is almost exactly the same as the definition of the word nation. So if we go down to the definition of the word peace, the tranquility enjoyed by a political society, internally by the good order which reigns among its members, and externally by the good understanding it has with all other nations. Applied to the internal regulations of a nation, peace imports, which means indicates or shows, in a technical sense, not merely a state of repose and security as opposed to one of violence or warfare, but likewise a state of public order and decorum. It's basically just a further explanation of the definition of the term nation. So you have all these people and they come together and they operate with good internal tranquility and external tranquility, good diplomatic relations, and a state of public order and decorum, and they operate as a moral body. That is the definition of a nation, right? So you have this, going back to nationality. So now let's read this again, and we're gonna replace all these terms, okay? I'm going to replace all these terms with everything we've already covered. The term national means a individual or organization owing allegiance to a nation. And now we're starting to see, how does this work, right? Now, the next thing we need to look at is the word allegiance. How does that work, right? So I have a special document that I give away for free on my Nation of the Amnesty Coalition page that has to do with getting a special passport with diplomatic immunity. It's called the explanatory statement. You attach this statement to the back of the DS-11 passport application form in order to get the non-citizen national passport.
So I'm literally in the process of renewing my passport And I'm wondering if I should try to do this right now or just go along with the regular passport for expedience and then try to do this all a little bit later on.
You can do it. You can do it. You can go back and get a new passport every week if you want. You just pay the money again. That's all.
I might do it. All right.
So let's go down to the term allegiance. I have a lot of the definitions culled here. So if anybody here wants to look at the originals on these, which that's how I think when I look at all this, it's like, oh, who's this guy, right? If you go to my State National Theory page, which is the book version of all of my information, if you prefer to read it all, it's an entire live book that you can actually just read right now immediately. At the top of the State National Theory page is downloadable PDFs of the first 6 editions of Black's Law Dictionary. The first edition is not a full document. It's actually broken off, and I haven't been able to find a full version. So I mean, the first is like whatever anyways. The fourth is actually my favorite. But you can download all of these here, and you can look up these definitions for yourself that we're going to be covering from this. I just use this for expediency purposes, right? So the definition of allegiance, let's see here. Oh, I think it's A-L-L-E. There we go. Okay. So allegiance is used a lot. And we need to clear up what that means, right? So the definition of allegiance from Black's Law second edition, by allegiance is meant the obligation of fidelity and obedience, which the individual owes to the government under which he lives or to his sovereign in return for the protection he received. Now, this is the most important part, because a lot of people, when they learn all this, they go, I'm not pledging allegiance to the federal corporation. Fuck them. Here's the secret, right? It may be an absolute and permanent obligation, or it may be a qualified and temporary one, okay? Now, if you look at these various things, right? So we've already learned that there's this thing called national. And in relation to the passport is very, very clear. We have 22 CFR. Who can have a passport? Everybody says, oh, U.S. citizens. No, that is entirely false. 22, Code of Federal Regulations, Section 51.2, a passport may be issued only to a U.S. national. What is a U.S. national? U.S. national is defined in 8 U.S.C. 1101, subsection A22. The term national of the United States, or U.S. national, same term, means a citizen of the United States, or B, a person who, though not a citizen of the United States, owes permanent allegiance to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same definition as 21, owing permanent allegiance to a state, owing permanent allegiance to the state called United States. We can see that echoed here at 22 USC 212. It says here, persons entitled to passport, no passport shall be granted or issued to or verified for any other persons than those owing allegiance, whether citizens or not, to the United States. So when I do my passport explanatory statement, we do a non-citizen limited temporary allegiance pledge. And it's very, very clear. So it says here, I am to be clear, I am not an enemy of the incorporated entity that calls itself United States. Again, because we're at peace. But since I do not live in that area, nor do I have much in the way of contractual obligations with that area, my allegiance lies simply in the ideas that are found within that incorporated body that would match up with the definitions of nation and peace from the definition section in section 2, same one we already covered. My allegiance is not infinite and unconditional. My allegiance is confined to be within the definitions of nation and peace. And if the federal corporation decides at any point to step outside of those definitions, then my allegiance would end at that point. By definition, if the federal corporation ever steps outside the definition of nation or peace, then by its own codes, it ceases to exist. My allegiance ends at that moment that the nation ceases to exist simply because my support cannot exist for a nation that does not physically exist. My true and unfettered allegiance lies in the ideas and spirit behind the idea of being a true American. Freedom, common law, masculine and feminine duality, supreme force, technical performance, national pride, etc. My love and devotion to the heart and soul of our collection of independent, unincorporated states is unquestionable and barely conditional. My allegiance ultimately lies in the unincorporated state in which I domicile, but that love does truly extend to all the other unincorporated states found within our union that intend and factually produce tranquility inside and outside their nation and carry themselves as a unified body that operates with morals and decorum. Now, that is a limited and temporary pledge of allegiance. You do not need to be a citizen to have a passport. With a passport, you can travel. You do not need a driver's license. You can travel with a passport. You can open up bank accounts with the passport. And if you look on the I-9 form, you will see here the employment eligibility verification. You have to prove two things to legally work. You have to prove identity and employment authorization. List A are documents that establish both of those things immediately. Point one of List A is U.S. passport or U.S. passport card. You do not need a green card. You do not need to go through a citizenship process. You do not even need to speak English. There is no such thing as illegal aliens. There are people who have pledged allegiance to the United States, and there are people who have not. If you go to the border and you say, I pledge allegiance to the United States, you are now legally a non-citizen national. A non-citizen national is an actual full-blooded American. A U.S. citizen is not. A U.S. citizen is an employee or officer of a foreign corporate zone called United States. That's why the illegal aliens, quote unquote, get all the free stuff because they're the actual Americans. The illegal aliens are the actual Americans. The U.S. citizens are essentially the illegal aliens.
That's fascinating. Wow. That's really, really fascinating, man. All right. Continue.
So real quick. So now we get into, now that you understand all that or you know, at least have some knowledge of it. Now we're going to get into a real short skit here. This will be my last 13 minutes. Now, how does this go into taxation, right? Very simple. Now that you understand all that, or now that we've covered all that, taxation is really simple. So 26 CFR, Code of Federal Regulations, section 1.871-1. For purposes of the income tax, alien individuals are divided generally into two classes, namely resident aliens and non-resident aliens. Resident alien individuals are, in general, taxable the same as citizens of the United States. That is, a resident alien is taxable on income derived from all sources, including sources without the United States. So a resident alien, so the word citizen means employee or officer. So a resident alien would be somebody who lives in United States, which is an unknown location inside of the District of Columbia, but they're not necessarily an officer or employee of the federal corporation. A U.S. citizen is somebody who lives in United States, which is located in some unknown location inside the District of Columbia, that works for the government as an employee or officer of the government. And for people who ask me, oh, well, then shouldn't they be paying me? No, if you look up employment laws associated with U.S. citizens, they do not need to pay you in order for you to be considered a voluntary employee. So a non-resident alien individuals are taxable only on certain income from sources within the District of Columbia and on the income described in section blah, blah, blah from sources without the District of Columbia. But if you go here, it doesn't go anywhere. It kind of fizzles into this like confusing mass. It's actually really hilarious. So that doesn't really go anywhere. So we just stop right here, right? So they're saying that non-resident alien individuals, meaning individuals that do not live in the District of Columbia, are taxable only on certain income from sources within the United States, right? Now, this is where naturalization comes into play, and this is what everyone has done without knowing it, right? This is where you're going to get pissed, okay? This is where everyone gets pissed. So in the same thing we have here, however, ooh, ominous, right? Non-resident alien individuals may elect to be treated as U.S. residents for the purposes of determining their income tax liability. So when you filled out your first W-9 tax form, when you were probably 16 or 18 working at Taco Bell, McDonald's, or a car wash, you certified under penalty of perjury that, number three, you are a U.S. citizen or other U.S. person, and you signed here, and it says right here, signature of U.S. person. You were a non-resident alien individual, and then you naturalized and elected to be treated as a U.S. resident for the purposes of determining your income tax liability. You volunteered to pay taxes.
Yeah. Wow. And it's, I love it. And now knowing the definition of person too. And of course that incorporates the,
got it.
Yeah. The legit. Wow. That's, that is a real kick in the dick.
Now I have a free document on my Nation of the Amnesty Coalition page. It's an affidavit. It's called a revocation of election to be treated as a U.S. resident for purposes of determining your income tax liability. Now 26 CFR 601.602. Subsection A1 or A. The tax system is based on voluntary compliance, and the taxpayers complete and return the forms with payment of any tax owed, right? Now, if you look at, this is what everyone sends me all the time, this truth about frivolous tax arguments. If you share this with your non right-leaning red-pilled family and friends, they're going to send you this article, okay? Now, this article is hilarious. They say a lot about all the stuff that I'm talking about, but they only use one term to describe everybody. They use the term taxpayer. You can see here, taxpayer, 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 taxpayer. Everything is a taxpayer. Every single letter you get from the IRS is dear taxpayer, dear taxpayer, dear.
No mention of person at all in there. No mention of, yeah, now, wow, interesting.
Now this trips people up because they write all this. Now what's funny is this is all true. Everything that they write in this frivolous tax thing is all completely true. I am not telling anyone, including your family that thinks you're crazy. When they send you this, everything on this truth about frivolous tax arguments is true. But it's you have to understand the definition of the term taxpayer. Taxpayer comes from 26 USC 7701 subsection A14. So what is the definition of taxpayer? This is the big, huge monster secret. The term taxpayer means any person subject to any internal revenue tax. Mm-hmm. It's circular. They're saying when they say taxpayers believe that they are not supposed to pay blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, a taxpayer would be someone located in the District of Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't say that, oh, no, the IRS is lying. No, the IRS isn't lying. I'm not a taxpayer. Neither is the ens legis, unless I place the ens legis in one of their corporations, then it is a taxpayer. Mm-hmm. So the thing is that you elected to be a taxpayer, and I have a document called a revocation of election. You can find other ones online. The revocation of election, they will always process these. There is no approval process, disapproval process. We don't know. We have additional questions. Tens of thousands of these things I know personally have been sent in. They are 100% always processed. In fact, of all the organizations that my entire massive group, which is huge now, it's like probably 100,000 people doing this, the organization that follows the law better than any other organization in the world, and the organization that is the easiest to actually work with, is the Internal Revenue Service. They will do anything you tell them to do, anything, as long as it's found in the law. And you don't even need to list the laws. They know the laws. They'll never tell you the laws, but they know these things.
Like, do you think it's just one guy that's like really knows this shit in there that's like,
yep,
I know these things are coming. I'm going to deal with it. And yep. It's literally, it's like, yeah, the guy in the basement with a staple or an office space, right?
That's the thing. The first thing that people go through when they start learning all this is they think that everyone knows except them, and they get in this kind of boogeyman state. I promise you, if the guy at American Express working in a fucking cubicle knew any of this information, he wouldn't be there. If the guy in the IRS working in the basement, you know, everyone hates him. All his family hates him. Everybody hates him. You think he'd be there if he knew any of this information? No. No one knows any of this information. But even though no one in the IRS knows any of this information, somehow they follow the law better than any other organization on the planet. They will process these things, no problem. You volunteered into the system, and you can volunteer out. The whole point of the 13th Amendment is there is no such thing as involuntary servitude in America. Everything is voluntary. Driver's license is voluntary. You say, oh, well, no, it's not. They're going to pull me over. They're going to do all this. No. When you understand how the law works and you understand how all these things work, that's not true at all. It appears that way, but it can't actually be that way. And you can countersue and you can make tons of money and you can take people's badges away and you can do all sorts of things. Involuntary servitude does not physically exist. And the organization that shows that more than any other organization in this entire North America, both countries, the incorporated country and the non-incorporated country, is the Internal Revenue Service. They will never, ever, 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 ever do anything that would be outside of voluntary servitude, which is completely legal. You volunteered by giving them information you did not need to give them. There is absolutely no law anywhere stating that you have to file any documents with the IRS at all. So from their perspective, you willingly and voluntarily elected via a W-9 form to be treated as a U.S. resident for the purposes of determining your income tax liability. Now, just as easily as you volunteered in, you can volunteer out. The same kind of fanfare and difficulties they gave you when you volunteered in, which was nothing, is the exact same thing you're going to experience when you unvolunteer.
It's really fascinating, man. Just the amazement that I have. I mean, because I really didn't know about this. I've been in the space for 10 years, 12 years. I didn't know any of this. This is all news to me. The definitions of volunteering, the tricking me into signing it, and the fact that everybody just kind of goes along with it, because as you said, they don't know. It's just what you do. Yeah. And then everybody takes it that this is the law, when it's just been essentially smoke and mirrors. And I mean, the fact that we volunteer into the system really pisses me off, but it makes complete sense of what you're telling me. I mean, yeah, you do. It is slavery. You can't have it. It makes complete sense. And God, it's, you're not wrong. I'm very angry.
See?
I mean, very angry. So here's, I think this has worked well though. I like this. You've given us a perfect basis. And as I said, I've got to run because I've got a sick kid and you're coming off a cold. So it's good. Yeah. So what we'll do, this will be part one of two. Hopefully we will not reschedule 80 times and we'll be able to get a part two recorded quick. Cause I want to, basically what I want to do is I'm going to bank it till we can record the second one. So that way I'm not going to leave, you know, a month between or 2 months between for people.
You can launch this one. This is a complete, I feel really good about, this is a complete show. This one we just did.
Yeah. Oh, no. I'll launch this as a complete show. I just don't want to wait too much. I want to make sure we can schedule something.
Oh, I see.
Months.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's not going to be too long before the next one, because I know people are going to hear this and they're going to want to know, okay, tell me more about how to disconnect, because that's the next topic. We're going to get into the disconnection. And in the meantime, though, obviously people could go to onestupidfuck.com.
Yeah. I have a free course
to do so.
Yep. It's called the Contract Killer Course. It's 39 days. I have the State National Theory page, which is an entire book. If you don't want to wait 39 days and you're just like dying for it, it's a book form. I have my own YouTube channel. Tons of stuff goes on there that's not located anywhere else. And then I go on shows like this all the time, sometimes 5, 6, 7 times a week. So you can go into Spotify or YouTube, type in Brandon Joe Williams. You're going to come up with 8 million shows from 8 different million places. So there's no lack of information. There's no lack of anything, but I would definitely, absolutely love to come back and go into this farther and go into other things. And this is just the beginning. I mean, we're barely scratching the surface here.
I can tell. Well, I will immediately email you and Rebecca and set something up for the next time. So Brandon, thank you so much, man, for coming on the show.
Thanks, guys.
It was an absolute blast. For all of you out there, thank you for joining me, for Brandon, Joe Williams for coming on. I will link to all of the links that he just talked about in the show notes, guys. So make sure you check those show notes. And we will be back with Brandon, Joe Williams very, very soon. So from me, from Brandon, from the Lions Liberty Network, and from Mean Age Daydream, guys, keep those electric eyes on us and keep that ray gun to our head. Later.